This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han with the top business stories of the day. We begin with the Department of Statistics. It's announced new numbers of the median monthly household income for Malaysians, which rose 6.6% per annum in terms of a nominal value from 2014 to 2016. This is said to be in line with the country's gross domestic product growth.
The median household monthly household income grew to 5,228 ringgit in 2016 from 4,585 ringgit in 2014. So this is according to the Statistics Department's Household Income and Basic Amenities Survey conducted between May 2016 and April 2017. In terms of real value, after being adjusted for inflation, median monthly household income grew 4.4% in that 2 years.
So not the 6.6, but 4.4 is the more accurate reflection of
after
real growth in your income.
Yeah, well, real, I wouldn't call it more accurate, but yeah, go on. I mean, it's just different standards, yeah.
Okay, and Malaysia's Gini coefficient ratio declined to 0.399 in 2016 from 0.401 in 2014. So this indicates improvement in Malaysia's household income distribution.
Yeah, so essentially, you've got household incomes in Malaysia that's growing, and it's growing faster than inflation, all right? And at the same time, the income disparity, the income inequality among households in Malaysia, that is narrowing as well, as measured by the Gini coefficient. And it looks like KL, you know, you folks there in KL, Kuala Lumpur, you guys.
We folks, I believe.
Hey, no, hey, where's Selangor? Anyways, so that's a discussion for another day. The folks in KL recorded the highest median monthly household income of just over 9,000 ringgit in 2016. Penang coming in at about 5,400 ringgit, and Selangor at 7,225 ringgit. So, you know, once again, it's interesting to note these trends, right? Growing household income, or that's faster than inflation, versus what we're seeing in the on the sentiment side of things. Because if you look at, say, the consumer sentiment index, now that has been pretty lackluster. In fact, we have been deemed pessimistic as a whole, pretty much since the end of 2014. So again, that's according to MIER's Consumer Sentiment Index. So it's, yeah, you know, once again, why this disparity? You know, that's a discussion for, you know, economists and policymakers to contend with.
Okay, so what do we understand is the link between higher income growth and higher consumption? Are economists disaggregating the numbers for us and revealing something of the news patterns?
I mean, well, according to Starbiz, an economist that they cited in their story, essentially, you know, this higher monthly income growth is not reflected in much stronger private consumption. However, to be fair, you know, consumption has been deemed to be resilient. It is still deemed to be one of the key drivers for Malaysia's GDP growth.
So let's maybe look at different sectors. Has this had any effect on, say, the property sector, Joyce?
Well, speaking about property, Sharad, the Association of Banks in Malaysia has strongly refuted allegations regarding house buyers facing difficulty in getting housing loans, right? So ABM has said that all its 27 commercial bank members in Malaysia have always been supportive in providing home loans to all eligible borrowers. The overall housing loan approval rates remain high at 73% of the applications in the second quarter of 2017. And we checked that with Bank Negara statistics, and the statistics show that the approval rates for purchase of residential properties are up. Loan approved for residential properties up 14% year on year to 9.8 billion ringgit in August 2017.
So, according to the ABM Association of Banks, it's 27 member banks. They take an average of 2 to 9 working days, which is in contrast to what Reda has alleged, right? They have alleged in the past that it takes about 60 to 90 days.
That's quite long, huh? 90 days.
But then, according to ABM, they say 2 to 9 working days. Again, that's to process a housing loan application.
2 seems like rather short period, right? To do all the due diligence necessary.
It's a super efficient bank.
That's what they say, you know. But hey, I mean, if you're
online today.
Yeah, but if you're a loan applicant, you know, 2 days, heck yeah, you know, you sign up for that. But again, the caveat here is this is once complete documentation is submitted by. Yeah, so if you've ever been through that process, you know, it takes quite a bit of paperwork as well. You know, still, but broadly speaking, though, beyond the property sector, in just terms of loans growth, for example, you've got CIMB research that expects loan growth to be between 4 to 5% for this year, which is slower than last year's loan growth of 5.3%.
I guess the other question, of course, for people who want to buy properties, how much of a loan can they get? Yeah. Can they get 90% financing, or is it somewhat less? And what I'm hearing anecdotally is it's something around 60%, which means you have to come out with a pretty large chunk of money, taking that from savings, I guess.
Right, or savings. I mean, EPF has also added some provisions to help first-time home buyers, right? And you have policies from the government to try and alleviate those pressures as well. But at the same time, the banking sector has to be very cognizant of the fact that the household debt here in Malaysia is about 90%, or just shy of 90%. So we are increasingly become more leveraged, right? So how do you strike that balance, you know, whereby we don't go into, like, say, Australian territory? Australia, household debt to GDP, 120%, right?
So the banks have to make sure that they are eligible.
Lending prudently.
Yeah, the borrowers are eligible for right. the loans, yeah. Mm. But coming back to your point, Sharad, I guess this is what the property developers are saying. Banks are saying that they're lending, but property developers are saying that not enough, because sometimes the bank gives 60% margin on financing, and that's not enough for the borrower to buy that unit. So the property developer will say, oh, but that's not enough money, you can't buy the unit. So to the property developer, that's not a sale. But to the bank, I've already approved the loan. So, you know, that's why you get this
this whole push-pull. Mm. Obviously, when it comes to property developers, they just want to sell as many units as they can. You think of the kind
And banks by the same token want to give out as many loans as they can.
Yeah, if they can. But they have to make sure that the loan borrower is a good borrower and they can pay back the loan.
Exactly, right? You know, and then, so you got to take other factors into consideration. Whereas with the property developers, yeah, they just want to sell it out there. If you think of the kind of creative schemes that they've placed out there in the past, like dibs, for example, and etc., just to facilitate those sales. And then, you know, like, given the oversupply that we're seeing right now as well, you know, you can understand why developers are pressured, but it's a push-pull thing, right, between the financial sector versus the property developers. And obviously, you know, we potential home buyers, we are kind of caught in the middle.
Okay, speaking of the financial sector, the KL Finance Index has outperformed the FBM KLCI Index. It's up 15% year-to-date, while the FBM KLCI is up 8% year-to-date. So more numbers for you. Now, moving on to IKEA, I think is how you ought to pronounce it. They're talking about more income. And for some, they'll be using it on furniture, I guess. The latest news is that IKEA is looking to do online sales on third-party sites. The question is whether this is a good idea, using a third-party site to sell online.
All right, so here's what we know about IKEA right now. Okay, they have got over 400 IKEA stores around the world. And now you've got another 22 stores that are expected to open in the coming year. India, Latvia, you know, even here in Malaysia, we've got the one in Batukawan and the one in Johor set to come online in the coming years as well.
I love the India-Latvia thing, because they couldn't be two more contrasting countries in terms of size.
Just to show you the global appeal for IKEA. I mean, it's not just them, Latin America, etc. as well, right? So now they are still pursuing growth via those brick and mortar stores. At the same time, like you mentioned, Sharad, they are doing this push into the online space as well.
The company is also slated to launch an e-commerce site for both Singapore and Malaysia. Singapore this month, Malaysia next year. So you can see that they are looking into this whole e-commerce digital push. But whether or not that will help, because there's the brick and mortar kind of shops, and they want to go into the digital push because of the shift in shopping patterns. Mm. Whether that will help, because I think if we look at Toys R Us, what happened there, Han?
Well, so with Toys R Us, essentially the execution of their digital foray, that was ultimately their undoing, because back in 2000, at the height of the dot-com era, Amazon and Toys R Us signed that 10-year agreement, right? That would make Toys R Us the exclusive vendor of toys on Amazon. You know, basically, if you clicked on ToysRUs.com, you'll send those potential buyers to Amazon instead. So, I mean, long story short, we now know what happened to Toys R Us. And, you know, there could be potential pitfalls essentially when it comes to rolling out this digital story. In fact, now Toys R Us actually sued in 2004 to end that contract with Amazon in 2006.
Yeah, I think after that, Toys R Us started to set up their own website in 2006, but that didn't really help. I guess when they put it on Amazon, it also helps people to the whole idea of buying online. The whole, and rather than to walk into a toy store.
Right.
So it's but, different.
But then, you know, again, it's one thing to buy a store, buy a toy online versus buying a bed online. Because, I mean, for example, say the barrier of entry or just the price point, right? It's one thing to spend 20 ringgit, 50 ringgit on a toy versus, you know,
a couple of thousand on a bed.
Yeah.
And you might want to sit on the bed and not on the toy.
Well, depends on who you are.
But the whole experience of going to an IKEA store, shopping experience of walking through the whole IKEA store, going to the cafe to eat.
And the meatballs. If they allow us to buy the meatballs via that e-commerce site, now we're talking, okay?
You can eat virtual meatballs. Very quickly, we have also a story about what's happening in Singapore. Apparently, the Singaporeans still love their malls.
Yeah, so Amazon is facing tough hurdles as it enters Southeast Asia via Singapore, where brick and mortar stores are still thriving. Shopping in air-conditioned malls is practically a national sport in Singapore, as well, I guess. People love free aircon, walk a bit. So, yeah.
Meet people, make friends.
Well, no, that's only you,
Shira. That's only you, Shira,
But it's not just Singapore, okay? Here in Malaysia as well, I believe Aeon spoke about how they want to add on 2-3 more malls across Malaysia, not just here on the peninsula, but also in Sarawak as well.
So, well, there's this digital push, this whole online shopping thing, but depending on which market you're in, it might not pick up yet.
Yeah, I mean, the Whole Foods purchase as well, that is a sign that there is still confidence in brick and mortar.
Okay, we're coming up to the news, and after that we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis for you. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.